Tom Grennan, Little Bit of Love. We might have some love for you later. No, I've said too much. Hello and welcome to Live and Local with BB Lynch, Dame BB Lynch. We have a brilliant show lined up for you tonight. Something exciting is happening. We have music, we have guests, we have probably award-winning radio till 10 p.m. Shall we do it? Do you remember last week when I tried to reintroduce tune to the vernacular? Well, that was a tune, Regulate. Warren to the G, Nate Dog. Love that. How are you? How are you doing? I bought two things today, right? And one made me almost cry with joy. I love it so much. I bought a coffee table. Yeah, I'm at that age. I bought a coffee table and it's G-Plan. Did we all know about G-Plan? Oh, it's so beautiful. And I also bought an amber decanter. Amber decanter, that should be my strip name. I don't know why I have an amber decanter, but I love it very much. So I've been spending money I don't have today. And I've also been really excited today about tonight's show because I think we've got such a great show for you. We have a surprise for you, which I'm going to tell you about in about 20 seconds. First of all, in a few minutes, I'll be speaking with Helen Brooks, aka the Tummy Whisperer, all about like IBS and poor tummies and how hypnotherapy could be the answer. I know. From 9, once again, we'll be enjoying Upload. 30 minutes of Upload, and we're going to be hearing your great contributions and chatting with one of the creators. And then at 9:30, they've only let us back. It's the Pepsi and Shirley of BBC Radio Sussex, BBC Radio, sorry. Alison Ferns and I return with a special After the Watershed. And we will be talking about, I honestly don't know why they did this. We'll be talking about how the pandemic has changed dating, relationships and sex. You do not want to miss it. Seriously, it's going to be a great show. So please stay with us.
BBC Radio Sussex.
Destiny's Child, Independent Women, Part 1. Independent women, we've had quite a week, haven't we? Women, let's not dwell. I'm in a really weird mood. I think I'm in a good mood. I saw Danny Pike leave and I told him I was perking. To be honest, that's never a word that's been used in association with your dame, BB Lynch. I am really, really happy and excited to introduce our first guest tonight. Welcome to Live and Local, Helen Brooks, a.k.a. the Tummy Whisperer. Hello.
Hi there, BB.
How are you? Paint the scene. Where are you, please?
I'm in my lovely little workspace in Hove with a rather strange pair of slippers on and a nice purple blanket, which is great. I'm used to working on Zoom, so I have my funny bottom half attire and my nice smart top half attire, which is the way I work these days.
I really love that. That's so funny. why the scissors? Scissors? Helen, I know we're going to talk about stomachs in a minute, but I think my brain needs more help. have you got lockdown brain?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I just can't. So I just said scissors. I meant slippers. What's weird about them?
Slippers. They're foxes. Fox slippers.
Once again, I regret opening my mouth. How have you been? How's the whole lockdown thing been for you?
It's been tough, but there's been positives to it as well. But I'm definitely looking forward to it all being over. There's light at the end of the tunnel. And I think, as we all are, we're all looking forward to being able to get out and hug family and meet up with friends again and hopefully have a really good summer.
Wouldn't it just be, I mean, how lucky are we to be down here? Summer would just, I honestly, that's what's keeping me going, I think, the thought of that.
On the beach.
Oh, it would just be so incredible. I'm going to start drinking properly, I think, and just... Are you allowed to drink on the beach? Is that against the law?
I think so. I certainly have done for many years, so yeah.
Why would that be against the law? I don't know. Before we talk about you as the Tummy Whisperer, what's your background? How did you kind of get into all of this?
As a hypnotherapist.
Yeah. So you're a clinical hypnotherapist and... a degree in applied psychology.
Yeah, that's it. So I guess, if we go all the way back to me when I was a little girl, I was always curious about what went on in other people's heads. always had my head in autobiographies when I was a bit older. But then as a teenager, I experienced anxiety. And so I guess the focus then changed from what was going on in other people's heads to really what was happening to me. I wanted to know what it was, why it was happening to me, and how I could fix it. And I was really lucky that I got the care and support that I needed to enable me to find relief from that. And at one point, I experienced real genuine empathy from a caring professional who said to me, "It's okay, I understand how you feel." And I guess those words and that empathy really changed the course of my life forever. I guess I didn't know at that time, but I found my calling. So let's fast forward. I moved to Brighton to study for a degree in applied psychology at Sussex Uni, which was then followed by a three-year hiatus, travelling the world and giving me time to think about how I wanted to work with people. And it was during that time that I learned more about hypnotherapy and the unconscious mind, and just thought that it sounded really a fascinating way of working and a great way to help people. So upon my return from my travels, I studied for a diploma in hypnotherapy, and in 2003 set up my practice. And so I've been working as a hypnotherapist. This will be my 18th year. So yeah,
I love this. So it's what you've always, it's your calling, it's what you've always done.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always been fascinated by people and psychology and consciousness, and it just feels great working with people to help them. So, you know, I often say to people, I've got the best job in the world. It's something that I never get bored of. There's always more to learn. There's so many different areas that you can focus on and specialise in. And I guess that was IBS for me. So I've had experience of working with all sorts of issues, a broad range of clinical applications of hypnotherapy. But more recently, I've decided to specialise in using hypnotherapy to help people with irritable bowel syndrome. And so, yeah, that's really my focus now.
I've got so many things to say now. So first of all, I didn't realize how many people suffer. So it's all, you reckon between all the stats say between 10 to 15% of the world's population.
Yeah, absolutely. It's phenomenal. It's an incredible amount of people. It's very common. And I think the reason that I wanted to specialize in working with people with IBS was a combination of there being so many people that really need support and help. And a lot of people, you know, often the first port of call is to look at what they're eating and go down the nutritional route. But there's quite a large percentage of people for which no amount of dietary changes or medication helps. And so they're left feeling that there's absolutely nothing that they can do to change their symptoms. And for a lot of people, they're really debilitating and really awful. And so there's so many people suffering, but there's so much evidence that supports a course of gut-directed hypnotherapy as an effective approach. And nobody really knows about it. And I got to a point where I just felt it's not okay that people don't know about gut-directed hypnotherapy as a treatment. And I love that it's backed by science. You know, there's so many different reviews and reports and clinical research that show statistics varying, of course, because there is a range of different research studies, but between 70% right up to 95% of people that respond positively to a course of treatment. And not just that, but there's been studies that have shown that the results of a course of hypnotherapy are long-lasting. So one of the studies followed people for 5 years, and their symptom reduction remained throughout that 5 years. So it's a long-term change, and it's safe, it's natural, it's effective. You know, what's not to love about it?
So if there's, this is so, well, first of all, because when you said earlier that you'd studied hypnotherapy, my head went to, is there actually a course in that? Which is a really terrible thing to say and think. But do you know what I mean? Because I'm sure some people don't take it as seriously as you obviously take it. And the stats are backing you up. So if there's 95% success rate, why hasn't this been, why aren't more people doing it?
That's a really good question. So I think that, exactly as you said, there is a lot of misconceptions about what hypnotherapy is. So, you know, if you went into a room of 100 people and said, did you know hypnotherapy could be useful for working with any physical complaints, that vast majority of people don't know that, because most people think of hypnosis as stage hypnosis.
Yeah.
And it's anything that you see on TV, whether I'm watching, you know, something on the kids, not that I often watch Danger Mouse very often, but, you know, on Danger Mouse, there's somebody there. There's always some mad professor who's hypnotizing people with some weird ring with a swirly pattern on. Or you switch on TV, and not so much nowadays, but, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, there was lots of stage hypnosis on TV of people doing really silly things. You know, people often say to me, are you going to make me cluck like a chicken? And the answer to that is absolutely no, not at all. So I think that hypnotherapy and the clinical application of hypnosis gets tied in with stage hypnosis.
Yeah. Could you make them cluck like a chicken, though, if you wanted to?
Maybe. I'd much rather try to get my husband to do the washing up today. You know, the fact of the matter is, you can't actually force people. You know, again, that's a misconception that you can control people, or that they're under your power, or that you can make them do something against their will, or they're going to blurt out their deepest, darkest secrets. In actual fact, they're in control the whole time. They're aware of what you're saying. And so it's really more about working with somebody and guiding them so that they can access the power of their subconscious mind to create the changes that they want to make. And in that way, it's great.
I love all this. I'm so intrigued by this. We're going to do the weather, have a track, and then come back. So I want to hear much, much more about exactly what's on your course, or, you know, how you do it.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about as well, I interviewed someone recently, and I was talking to him about, is it Crohn's? Is that a really, that's another tummy one, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And he said that the tummy, the stomach, is the second brain. And that's really stuck in my head. That's so, that's true, isn't it? If you get upset, it goes to your tummy, or you get butterflies.
Definitely, yeah. And that's so important, because that's how we can understand how hypnotherapy, because that's one of the questions is, well, how on earth can working with the mind help the gut? And I think it's really important to say that what we're not saying is that people who've got IBS, it's all in their mind, because that's often something that they hear, and that's really distressing and disturbing, and that's not the case. But what we're saying is that absolutely, IBS is not just about the gut, it's about the communication between the brain and the gut through something called the gut-brain axis. And that's the vagus nerve, it's the microbiome, it's the enteric nervous system. So the brain and the gut are in constant communication with each other. So everything, every emotion that we experience is relayed down into the gut, and we have a corresponding reaction. So exactly as you said, butterflies when they're nervous, or if you receive bad news, we say, oh, it's like being punched in the stomach. Or
gut instinct.
All of those things. It's to do with this close connection between the two. So when we're using hypnotherapy to change this communication, it's about calming the messages. There's a miscommunication that happens in people with IBS that creates a hypersensitivity and a hyperreactivity, which then leads to all of those IBS symptoms, such as pain, bowel changes, bloating, gas, all of those things.
I mean, it is no fun, is it, for some people?
And
it's debilitating.
Awful. Yeah, completely. Yeah.
There were some incredible reviews on your site about how you've changed people's lives. And there was one woman, I think was a GP, and she had symptoms, you know, chronic and also, debilitating for about 10 years.
Mm, yeah.
and you sorted it.
I know, isn't that great?
It's amazing. And it's kind of annoying that this hasn't been done before.
And that's why I'm on a mission, you know, I'm the tummy whisperer, but I have this hilarious image of me with this great big megaphone to get the message out there that, you know, if you are suffering from IBS and dietary changes and medication haven't helped, then there is something that can help that is evidence-based, that is scientifically shown to be effective long term. So absolutely, which is why it's really wonderful that you've invited me here today to spread the word.
You are very welcome. Listen, we'll have the weather, have a track, and then we'll come back to you. So Helen, please stay
there. Will do.
The Tummy Whisperer, isn't it? Brilliant name, isn't it? 95%. I can't go over this. If I had any powers like that, I would. I'd use them for evil. I can't lie. Let's look at the weather. Tonight will become largely cloudy. It will start off dry, but then some outbreaks of showery rain will move in from the north during the early hours of the morning. There will be light winds. The minimum temperature, 4 to 7 degrees Celsius. That's 39 to 45 degrees Fahrenheit. Tomorrow will be a dull day with light and patchy rain expected throughout. A fairly mild day with a moderate northwesterly breeze. Maximum temperature, 10 to 13 degrees Celsius. That's 50 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit.
Phoebe Lynch, BBC Radio Sussex.
The Killers and Somebody Told Me. Somebody Told Me, The Killers. I'm Phoebe Lynch. This is BBC Radio Sussex and BBC Radio Surrey. And on the line with me now is Helen Brooks, aka The Tummy Whisperer. Helen.
Hello.
Were you dancing?
I was foot tapping.
Oh, in those awful slippers.
I know. Why did I mention the slippers?
I don't know.
I'm never going to forget that.
Never, ever, ever. Tell me about, tell us everything about, so the whole online program is called Transform Your IBS with the Tummy Whisperer. You've got gut-directed hypnotherapy, you've got wellness coaching, you've got psychology. So talk about gut-directed hypnotherapy. So I come to see you, what do you do with me?
Okay, so first of all, I ask you a million and one questions. So I would want to learn all about you from childhood, understanding really the emotional landscape of your life, so any big events that have happened, and really get to know who you are and what's happening with you, and also obviously about your IBS symptoms when they first developed, what symptoms you suffer with, and really where you want to go. So we're looking at outcomes as well. So what is it that's going to make treatment successful? So it might be that it means that you can travel on a train without worrying about whether the toilet's out of order, or having a mental map of all the toilet stops on your way to work. Or for somebody else, it might be that they're experiencing terrible, awful bloating and they're terrified of going out and somebody asking them when they're due. So it's, understanding.
It's that bad for people.
Oh, it's awful. I don't think that most people without IBS can imagine just how hard it is, you know. Some people have horrific pain, their sleep is affected, they find it, you know, some people are almost housebound, you know, they find it really difficult to go out, and other people just so worried about what to eat, and they get almost a food phobia, and it's just incredibly stressful eating out in restaurants or just going to a friend's house to eat. There's so many different components that make it.
And this is just because your tummy is getting the wrong signals, directions, triggers from your brain.
Yeah, that's right. So IBS is considered a disorder of the gut-brain axis. So it's a problem caused by the communication between the gut and the brain. And in people with IBS, it becomes kind of hyper-reactive or hypersensitive, which can create this pain or just changes in the function of the gut. So when the gut's not functioning properly, we see these changes in all sorts of things, you know, nausea, bowel changes, bloating, discomfort. Yeah, so all of these things are because of that change in function.
So I'd come to you and you would find out kind of why and, you know, what's happened and my history and everything. And then what kind of sentences would you give me?
So the way that I work is really working through what I call three pillars of transformation. So to begin with, we look at the body. So taking all nutrition aside, so I don't deal with anything nutrition-based, because most people have been down that route and they've tried every possible diet. They've taken prebiotics and probiotics and all of those things, and it's a source of stress. So we look to move all of that to one side and then start by looking at the body in terms of breathing techniques and physical relaxation, because the mind and the body are inextricably entwined. So if you're stressed or anxious, then your breathing changes, and your breathing affects the digestion. So when we breathe in a calm, relaxed way, when we get nice, comfortable belly breathing going on, that's classed as a state of rest and digest. So we can actually change our digestion by changing our breathing patterns.
Oh, it's so interesting.
And that sounds crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah,
but that's where I start. It's the foundation, really. It's the breathing and the physical relaxation.
And then I guess
if
you give people instructions, these are all things they can do with you. But then, of course, they take it home and they're, you know, it's, they can continue themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's an element of the way that I work is the one-to-one sessions. But then also there's all of this information in an online program with a video, with the audios and with written information, so that people understand what's happening in their body and why it's happening, and then how we can change that. So starting with breath work, breathing and relaxation techniques, and the body, even posture can affect what's going on in the gut. Again, it sounds really strange, doesn't it? But if you're hunched over and in a closed posture, then the brain salience networks look out for stress, and they're more attuned to danger and stress. Whereas if we're in a very relaxed, comfortable, open posture, then the gut is going to be more relax.
Sorry, it's so fascinating. And you use wellness coaching as well, which I guess is just kind of lifestyle advice.
Yeah, so looking at ways to reduce stress, so understanding somebody's life, and that, you know, are they taking time to relax, what do they do to look after themselves, and small changes there. So if somebody's spending all day sat working on a computer, is how about just taking some time to go outside into you know, nature, or where we are here, go and have a beach walk, and just about, really, it's about this down regulation of the nervous system. So anything that's calming and anything that's relaxing is going to help this communication between the brain and the gut. So it's looking at all of that and where there are stresses and how we can help reduce those stresses, or if we can't reduce them, what we can do to cope with them better. So it's the body, the conscious mind, and then the subconscious mind, which is where all the gut-directed hypnotherapy comes in.
So if it's fight or flight, or, you know, kind of rest and digest, those are real, you know, caveman issues, right? You're going to fight or flight. Now, IBS sounds almost like a modern times ailment, because of other stresses. So three questions. Was there IBS back in the Stone Age? Were there people in the Stone Age? Whenever there were first people, was there IBS? Why? Where's it all gone wrong? And it must have escalated. You must be getting more people coming onto your online course now because of the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. So really interesting question. So was there IBS in caveman days? So I wasn't there, so I can't be 100% certain on this, but I think probably not. And the reason for that is that there are a number of different factors that create IBS. So some of those will be food, there's stress, and I think that, yes, okay, stress would have been there, you know, would have been looking out for big cave bears or saber-toothed tigers or whatever. But not stress like we're stressed in our modern society. life would have been very different. Antibiotics, the course of antibiotics or bacterial infection, these things can all have an impact on gut health. So it's usually not one thing that causes IBS, but it'll be a number of different factors that all come together to trigger IBS.
So advancements have kind of pushed this upon us. So, and how can you kind of give a figure? How many more people have come to you? What kind of percentage more do you think during the pandemic?
That's interesting. So I guess that probably more people are coming to me as well because there's a greater awareness of me in that, you know, I'm on the radio, which is wonderful. So things like that. But interesting, the pandemic. So for some people, it's been better and other people, it's been worse. So it's been worse because there's a higher level of stress amongst us all. But for some people, actually, life's been much easier because the people that struggle with commuting and being out and about or choosing what foods to eat in the workplace and worrying about having a flare up, life's been easier for them because they've been able to be at home. So they haven't encountered those stresses. But I've noticed an increase more recently. Now we are looking at returning to going back to work and back out into the outside world. And definitely it's been a recent influx of people that are worried because they're going to have to go back into those situations. So, yeah.
This is so fascinating. What's your kind of success rate? Can you say that? Is that possible to?
Wow. I don't like success rates. You know, I could say 100%, but that just doesn't sound
right.
Could
be one person.
Exactly. Yeah. But the vast majority of people that I work with see a significant reduction in their symptoms, and hopefully that will be long term. So, yeah.
What are your what are the Tummy Whisperers plans for 2021?
So, Tummy Whisperers plans for 2021 are a podcast I'm working on at the moment. Hopefully, out in April, if I press the right buttons and can get my tech head on. I'll get some help with that. And then really just, focused on raising awareness of gut-directed hypnotherapy and helping as many people as I can with IBS.
I think it's super interesting. And I guess IBS is your thing, but you could move that into other directions as well, couldn't you? You know, because it's hypnotherapy, it's well-being, it's psychology, the world's your what's it. Helen, how can people keep up with you? So you're the Tummy Whisperer on Insta and the tummywhisperer.co.uk.
Yeah, absolutely. So, connect with me on Instagram or pop over to the website and sign up for the newsletter, and then I can keep in touch and give details of the podcast when that's released, hopefully in April, or any other events or news as they arrive.
What's the name of the podcast?
Do you know what? I don't know yet. I knew you were going to ask me that. It's going to be something to do with the Tummy Whisperer and something to do with IBS. So, I think maybe I might need to put a poll up and ask people what the best name is. I can't have it something that's too long and too wordy because the Tummy Whisperer is a mouthful already. So, yeah, I might be open to suggestions.
Oh, this is totally going to be in my head now to think of something for you.
Please do. I'd love that.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and really super interesting stuff. And wish you all the best with it as well, because it's a relatively new online program, isn't it? So I wish you continued success. Take care,
Thank
Helen,
you.
And we will see you really soon.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is one of those songs you cannot talk over a second. That was Silk Sonic and Leave the Door Open. I'd never heard of that. I'd never heard of Silk Sonic. I've just Googled Silk Sonic. It's Bruno Mars and, who's the other man? Anderson Dot. How are we pronouncing that? P-A-A-K. Pack. That track is my new favourite song. That was released on March the 5th, day after my birthday. And did they play at the Grammys last night? They didn't win a Grammy. That was just open. They've just released that song. how I'm such a soul girl. I mean, girl, I call myself girl, you know, in the right lighting. But that buttered my muffins, as they say. I loved that so much. Did you hear the line in it? It's all kind of got those gorgeous and smooth, bouncy BVs. And then they say, shut your trap. I love Bruno Mars. Everything he does is gold. He has that gift of making all his songs, brand new songs, sound like classics. That sounds like something. Oh, I'm genuinely a little bit overwhelmed by that. Bruno Mars is the same height as me. James Smith, My Oh My. James Smith, My Oh My. I loved that as well, James. You know, it's a great track. Bruno Mars, though. BBC Radio Sussex. So my head is still thinking about the tummy whisperer. I love that your stomach is your second brain. And it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? You get butterflies when you're excited and you're in love. You feel nervous there, so that's anxiety. You get, every time I talk to you, do you remember when I first started doing the show here and there'd be a moth in the studio and I thought that moth had gone and I can see it checking me out? Got instinct. And so it's the guts where it's at. It's so clever what Helen's doing, and it's so interesting, and I'm totally I'm totally into learning about that. We've got a very interesting second hour for you. We've got our brilliant upload show portion, if you will, and we're chatting with Friend O'Show. Let's put it there. Friend O'Show. He is coming on later. And then we've got, they've led us back, the Cagney and Lacey of BBC Radio Sussex and BBC Radio Surrey. It's me and Ali Ferns. We are back tonight for a special. And we're going to be talking, it's the first of two After the Watershed specials. And we're going to be talking about how the pandemic has changed dating, relationships, and sex, in case there are any little ears. Little ears, small children's ears. I don't know what I'm saying. Sex. And more specifically, we're going to talk about how have you kept the spark alive, if indeed you have, and have you dated during lockdown? Because people are actually having like proper dates, aren't they? Like spaghetti bolognese over Zoom, which is... I don't like eating in front of people in real life, let alone online. And we are joined, Ali and I are joined by Love Honey's sex and relationship expert, Annabelle Knight. And she has fabulous things to say on all this, all the above. So keep listening. This is Rudimental, James Arthur, and Sun Comes Up. Regard and ride it. Welcome to the second hour of Live and Local with BB Lynch. Thank you for joining us tonight. And please get in touch. Text me on 81333. Start your message with the word radio. Rich, the nasty builder, has sent a little text in, and he says, did you say Hinge and Bracket were on later, sleepy? Well, Richard, Alison Ferns and I are on at 9:30 After the Watershed. Show some respect, please. It's going to be great. Ooh, guess what the time is? So one day I've stopped doing that, but today's not that day. For our first upload this evening, we return to a radio show we've heard from in the past. It's the Mental Health and Music Matters show on Radio Respect. Radio Respect is a community-run station in Bognor Regis, and this programme is all about shining a light on mental health issues and the resources available for people in Sussex. It's presented by JP and Louise. And if you like the sound of that show, the rest of it is available on Mixcloud by searching for Mental Health and Music Matters. If you're a radio presenter on a community radio station, then please send us what you're doing. The best place to go is bbc.co.uk/upload. Find you again, Mark Ronson and Camilla Cabello.
Call 0800 232 1045.
BBC Radio Sussex.
Now, we don't have an upload royal family yet. But if we did, you know, I would obviously be the queen, sat on a big, beautiful throne, tossing out ludicrous demands just to keep myself entertained. Hey, David, I did say I wanted 80% cocoa chocolate buttons, and these taste too milky. Anyway, I'd also have appointed David Attree as Upload Poet Laureate, responsible for perking up the nation through rhymes. And right now, on cue, he's here to present his latest words. Did you like that intro?
That was wondrous. I'm so grateful for you to have bestowed that title on me, Mom.
Mom? Isn't it ma'am, like jam? Don't make me sack you.
Whatever you say, ma'am.
Don't make me sack you instantly.
Think on first official meeting, it's ma'am, then after that.
Hey, so I bought some jam the other day, right? Mm-hmm. And it was called...
Is this before you buttered your muffins?
So sorry about that earlier. I'm totally going to get in trouble for that one. conserve.
Yes.
What's the difference between jam and that?
How posh you are.
Seriously?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it? That's ridiculous.
You've got conserve, then you've got taste the difference, or other brands are available, and then you've got bon manon, but only when it's on special offer.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of three layers of jam purchasing.
I love jam. Do you? What's your favourite jam? He's a poet. What's your favourite jam?
Oh, I love jam.
Tell me.
Come on, this is me you're talking to.
I'm sorry.
You're not going to get apricot or raspberry back from me, are you?
No, I'm not. I love, yeah. tell me, so we have some new work coming up from you. We're going to play two poems from you in a second. What are they, please? Or tell me about them.
Well, after last week's piece and chat, which is possibly the darkest piece of prose that I've ever written, and thankfully was skipped over by your colleague, the wondrous squirrel whisperer. It was everyone else is listening now going, say what now? I thought we'd kind of go back to a bit of lightheartedness this week. So the subject of the two poems this week, obviously, is limescale remover.
Do you know what?
Yeah.
That's a big deal down here, isn't it?
We are, absolutely. We are, sir. But everything's got a story, because I was just about to say, lime and chalk, and does everybody know what chalk's made of? And that just blows my mind, just with the maths involved.
Tell me.
Chalk.
You
know what chalk's made of?
What?
So basically, the number probably hasn't been made up yet, but almost single-cell organisms that had one tiny speck of calcium in their body.
Yeah.
When they died and rotted down, that tiny little speck, individual tiny little speck, that's calcium, that's chalk. So the cliffs we're looking at are trillions upon trillions upon trillions of tiny little calcium specks from the same amount of organisms that used to be swimming around in the sea. You can see why I write.
Are you making this up?
No, I am not making this up. No. I'm like QI Light, really, aren't I? I don't charge as much as Stephen Fry. There you go.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, limescale remover.
Yeah. Sure.
There's always two angles to every story, and as you know, and hopefully as the listener, I see things. I make note of things. I come back to them and sometimes even when I'm doing stuff, I think I wonder how this would look for somebody else. So the first poem is from a younger person's perspective of their dad suddenly finding a new cleaning product. And the other one is the kind of slightly sweet side of why the dad is so happy that he's found this cleaning.
Oh, okay. Am I going to cry?
No, because they're short and they're punchy, and they just drop you into a scene, and there's a little bit of humour there, but it's kind of how my mind works. We're surrounded by stories, and as you know, I'm writing people's stories, on my website at the moment, and we're surrounded by them, even just cleaning the bathroom, I have to stop sometimes.
do you dream poems?
I don't, but I have lain awake at silly hours in the morning. You were kind enough to play one called The Real Witching Hour a couple of months ago, which I did write in between that little limbo zone between 3 and 4, when as I said in the poem, it's too late to be early and too early to be late. there's just nothing going on. And I just sat there and I pretty much spoke that one.
That's so, our brains are sometimes not our friends, but sometimes they really are our friends. That's great, isn't it? I mean, you know, yeah, if you're going to make use of that time. I dream about tweets sometimes.
Ones that you've received or ones that you're planning?
Ones that I'm planning. It's like they...
I mean, this doesn't need to turn into a therapy session, but are they vengeful or uplifting?
How dare you? They're joyous. Everything I write is joyous.
Well, absolutely. Everything that you touch and say, yeah.
David, yes, thank you. Thank you, my poet laureate. Let's listen to. So we're going to listen to some now. So look, we will speak to you soon. You take care. And
yes,
we're going to hear Limescale Daisy and then Limescale Dad. I can't wait to hear these.
Good. Enjoy.
Take care. Bye.
Cheers, baby.
Those are the Limescale poets from our Upload Poet Laureate, David Attree. This is a big old firm. If you'd like the chance to join me in my royal household, I currently have opportunities for a Master of the Buckhounds and a Groom of the Stole. You can apply for these by sending in your best creative works at bbc.co.uk/upload. Moving Too Fast, Artful Dodger, Romina Johnson. Let's take a look at the weather, the outlook. Wednesday will be cloudy to start, but increasing sunny spells are expected through the afternoon. Thursday will be breezy and cool with showers or spells of rain early in the day, clearing to the east to leave sunny spells in the afternoon. Friday will continue breezy and cool with a mix of sunny spells and clouds.
Phoebe Lynch. Radio Sussex.
We've had a lovely text from Jane telling me about jam. Thank you, Jane. Thurston's jams, apparently they're fantastic. We've got something very special happening in about 15 seconds. I hope they're young ears, young people are away, adult topics. You're going to love it. It's me and Alison Ferns back together again with After Watershed special. Take care.
Well, as we know, 2020, 2021 have all been pretty rubbish years. So what do you need in your life? You need After the Watershed. It's back. She's back. That's your cue, love. That's your cue.
I'm so sorry. I'm just giddy from you flirting as soon as you saw me today. I mean,
wow.
Alison,
Your hair's got so long.
Thank
you,
darling.
I like it. It's proper like swishy hair.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Did
it's you lockdown
notice,
hair.
Did you notice my lockdown stomach?
I didn't. I averted my gaze. I hope you didn't notice mine. That is the thing, though, isn't it? You know, I need to socially distance myself with my fridge at the moment. Do you know what I mean? I've started wearing a mask indoors, not because of coronavirus, just to stop myself from eating.
I've got to be honest, and I know we can't, you know, make light of any of this, but I think I look better in a mask. And I think...
You have got beautiful eyes.
Thanks, mate. Mm. And I do think... So right back at you. But I do think I will be more popular with people post... When we get out of all of this, the mask might stay for a while.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. We are talking about how lockdown has changed relationships. And we probably should start by saying this will be an adult conversation covering adult issues. So if you're easily offended or you have young ears around... You probably want to switch off for the next half an hour.
You've just described me.
Yeah.
But I'll stay for a little while.
Yeah. See if you can handle it.
How are you, Alison Ferns?
How am I? People keep talking about the corona coaster. I can definitely relate to that. Like some days I'm like, yes, I've got this. Well, I'm not really quite sure what it is I'm supposed to have got. But anyway, and other days I'm just like, oh, I'm really done with this. Please, can we just wrap it up now? But I feel like we are coming out of it now. There's definitely a sense of hope and optimism, I think. The weather's getting a little bit better.
Yeah, I really do think it's down to the weather. I mean, I rarely use this word in association with me, but I have been feeling quite perky.
Really? Yeah. Well, things have turned a corner. I do think it has been an extraordinary time, though, for relationships. But it would appear, looking at some of the stats, that it seems to have pushed people kind of one or of two ways. Like it's either really strengthened people's relationships or it's completely devastated them. No in between.
There's nothing in between. And people have got back together, which is interesting. Because you'd imagine during this, how can anything new start?
Well,
but,
yeah.
But some have. But I think you've got in front of you a feature that's written by a promising young journalist.
Well, I'd go with the promising and the journalist. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about the rest of it. Are you referring to this article in the Metro
by
a certain Bebe Lynch?
Please.
And that's what this article is all about, isn't it? It's about how the pandemic has changed people's relationships.
Yeah, and some people, for some people, being together has not been a great thing. For some people, it has. And there was a man I interviewed in the piece, and he this has happened to a lot of people. He got back with his ex. They've got a child, and he just thought, you know, I don't want to have the whole lockdown not seeing my daughter. And it the pandemic gave them a second chance to really kind of reevaluate what they had. I think that's what's really interesting about the whole pandemic. I think if anything, it's gifted us an opportunity to, when the new normal, and I am using lots of little quotation marks there, comes in, to kind of make it what we want it to be now, because it's kind of a chance to change, isn't it? If we're not going to do it now, when will we?
It definitely focuses the mind, I think. And I think it's also turbocharged some relationships.
Yeah.
For example, you know, if people had only just started seeing each other, you know, this time last year, and obviously they then had to make that decision, didn't they? Do we lock down together? Do we get into that bubble, even though we've only been dating for a few weeks? And actually, for a lot of couples, it seems to have worked.
Exactly that. And again, a couple in the feature, they were dating, I think, 4 or 5 months, and they're moving in.
Could you do that? I could not do that. That is a gamble, isn't it?
Wow. Do you know what? My sister always said to me, she went, I really do think you will be the person that will meet someone and a week later you'll marry them.
I could see that, actually. Vegas. Yeah. Elvis officiating. But to suddenly, I mean, to be dating and then to suddenly move in with each other under these circumstances where, you know, you can't really go out and see anyone else. I mean, that's a pressure cooker.
It's a real pressure cooker. And this, and then another girl that I interviewed in the piece, another woman in the piece, this is that the other side with, like, the people that, so there's been lots of breakups, there's been, you know, there's been makeups, there's been breakups, there's been people really worried about what will happen in the future. So this woman was saying, you know, I've lost a year of my life to not being able to date, and I'm late 30s now, and so, you know, what will I do? How will this change stuff? And again, you know, some people could go either way. The roaring 20s that people are talking about, that people, they'll just be like lots of kind of intimate gatherings everywhere, or people might still be really scared of that.
Well, and look, if the roadmap keeps on track, can you even imagine what the 21st of June is going to be like? Or rather what the morning after the night before is going to be like? The state of people on the 22nd of June doesn't bear thinking about.
It doesn't bear thinking about, but all I'm saying is I'm bagsying me, you in the hot tub and a pipe of Pringles.
And all I'm saying is I don't want to get a call from the police station, all right? We have someone here in custody. They've said they'd like to call you as their one phone call.
Oh, that's so horrible that you wouldn't take the call. That's hilarious. I'm sorry, no, I've never heard of her.
I do think as well, though, like you say, you know, people feel as though they've lost a year of their lives in terms of not being able to date. But actually, some people have managed to date through lockdown. I was reading this story about a guy in New York. I mean, this is a very New York story, right? So there he was. He's a photographer. Jeremy is his name. You'd like him.
I love him.
Yeah. He was looking out his window and he spotted a young lady dancing on her roof. I told you this was very New York, right? So guess what he did? He sent his drone over to her with his phone number attached, and they had a chat on FaceTime. They then had some dates on FaceTime, so they would both have the same dinner, the same bottle of wine on their kind of respective roofs, and they got on, so much so that they are now a couple. So you see, people can make it work, even in the most extraordinary of circumstances.
Even in the most costly of circumstances. How much is the drone these days? I mean,
well, yeah. Are you telling me nobody's droned their number over to you during lockdown? No.
Do you want to hear about the one lockdown romance I've had?
Of course I do.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Have we done the adult topics little shout out to warn people?
Oh, how naughty is this story? No, we have, yeah.
Bad. It's not that bad. I don't even know. I might even have said it to you. So right at the beginning, before the first lockdown, I started messaging some bloke who tracked me down, if I may just add that. And we started messaging and he was really funny. I was like, oh, actually, this is great, you know. And we were saying, well, when could we meet? And we were trying to work it out through lockdowns and blah, blah, blah. We set a date where we were going to meet. And it was all like, you know, legal and, you know, when we were
She wasn't breaking any rules, people.
I wasn't breaking any rules. walls. And as someone who's as feisty as I am, I'm actually very scared of authority.
Are you?
Well, not really, no. But I do stick to rules. So and it was all kind of, you know, we were going to do it and everything. And then lockdowns happened, and so we couldn't do it. But we carried on messaging. And we'd only been messaging a few weeks in total, and he sent me a message saying, oh no, I just had my first lockdown breakdown. I said, oh really, what happened? He said, oh, I shaved all my hair, and I'm not talking beard or hair.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
So we're getting married very soon.
I was going to say, it's quite an intimate chat, really.
No one needs it. So that's not happening. So that's the level. I do think a lot of that would have been happening. Loads of people are having online sex.
Yes, cybersex has taken off. I mean, I don't know about you. I feel really self-conscious just on a Zoom call. You know, just on a work conference call. I don't like looking at myself on screen. I'm not sure that, you know, I'm not sure it'd be for me.
Well, you know, well, I mean, I mean, you're a young firm thing still, but for me, it's all about lighting or indeed
camera
no
angles.
Lighting.
Can you have cyber sex in the dark? Does that work?
With
your camera off? I've got my camera. You're on mute. No, I'm just not enjoying it.
Well, you know, I accidentally did a whole work Zoom call on camera. I'm not realising. So we don't want to talk about that.
No.
But yeah, you know, you talk about the people having like their spaghetti bolognese, simultaneous spaghetti bolognese, which just, I don't even want to eat on a date in real life, IRL, if you will.
Yeah.
But let alone that. I mean, that's ridiculous to me. But I think it's really interesting how this is all going to affect us. So I guess we want to talk today about what love life has been like.
Mm.
You know, what it's like.
But you've still had one.
Yeah, I know. And we've still got a few weeks of lockdown left, haven't we? So, you know, maybe you got in a rut. You know, maybe you're driving each other insane, or maybe you are still, you know, you've got another couple of dates lined up before we're allowed out of lockdown. So we should maybe see if we could get some advice on all the above.
Imagine the anticipation of that. Imagine if you have been messaging somebody throughout lockdown and on June the 22nd or whatever, you are going out for a proper date. I mean, that's going to be phenomenal, isn't it? That's going to be amazing.
It would be so exciting. But I mean, again, I've got my lockdown excuses ready now. So I need some of my hair.
Yeah.
I look like Demis Roussos. As I said to someone recently, I put mascara on for the first time in months, and I've got to say my chin had never looked prettier.
Oh, amazing. Well, you said you wanted some advice, or
yes,
maybe we
please.
Could all do with some advice when it comes to, how to keep a relationship going during lockdown, or how to actually find love.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased to say we have an expert on the line. Annabelle Knight joins us. She is the sex and relationship expert for Love Honey. Now, talking of Love Honey, I imagine sales have been, through the roof during lockdown. No, Annabelle?
Absolutely. I think people are, you know, spending a lot more time on themselves, or at least they have been in the last year. And that's the benefits of people spending more time on themselves when it comes to their sexual self as well.
Self-love, I believe they call it. Is that right, BB?
Why are you asking me? But what I would say, Annabelle, you know, we should start a sex toy range called Through the Roof. I think that would be hilarious.
You're right, though, what you say, though, Annabelle. Looking at the stats, 52% of adults say they have been more adventurous sexually during the pandemic. And I guess that kind of makes sense if there's nothing else to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, if you're stuck in the house, nowhere's open, no one's nipping to the pub for a drink or going to the cinema. So you've got a lot more time with yourself or with your partner. So what better way to pass the time than to experiment and expand your pleasure potential?
You know, Annabelle, you know, Ali and I were just saying that, I mean, Ali and I are both balking at people having carbonara together over Zoom. So people are having SEX. How does that work?
Well, it's...
And how do you make it safe?
Well, it expands on the point where I guess there is a certain level of trust. A discussion should be had before you engage in that, just to make sure you know your boundaries and what to expect, and to make sure that person is respecting your privacy and you're respecting theirs. But essentially, it's kind of expanding on the idea that sex isn't just penetrative. There's a lot of elements to the sexual experience, such as your conversation. You can have a very heated kind of sexy time just talking to someone. There's the visual you have, which you can engage in over video apps like Zoom. And then, of course, you can be with each other in a virtual way by using sex toys. There are loads of sex toys that work via Bluetooth. They work together.
So yeah, do you remember? Phoebe knows what I'm going to say, though. I'll never forget this poor woman who told us this awful story about one of these Bluetooth-enabled sex toys. So she was selling sex toys. It was kind of like a bit of like an Anne Summers thing. You know, she'd go to people's houses. There'd be a little Prosecco and she'd sell her wares. And she sold a whole load of these toys to a group of women, but they all lived in the same cul-de-sac. So you can see where this is going. So poor old Trevor at 42 is setting off Diane down at 26. Do you know what I mean? You've got to be careful. Goodness. Yeah, technology can let you down.
So definitely, I mean, I don't know what my advice there would be. Perhaps make sure your toys are turned off when not in use or the Bluetooth function is disabled.
Your advice is buy a castle. Move to a castle. Have a moat. No one's going to get near you.
Yeah. Funny. Also, top tip when it comes to the whole Zoom sex thing. A friend of mine was dabbling, shall we say, in that area over the lockdown period. Be careful of what you have on your bedside table because a tub of half-eaten Pringles doesn't shout sexy. Do you know what I mean? So I think there's a lot to take into account if you are going to go down that route.
I think one man's half-empty tub of Pringles is another man's aphrodisiac. Another man dozen oysters. I'd be thrilled by that.
How much of an issue is it, though, if you've got other people at home with you? I mean, it's all very well, you know, if, you know, it's just the two of you and, you know, you're in constant little love bubble. But I imagine if there are children or elderly parents or whatever at home and you're all locked down together, that could have the opposite effect on your sex life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone has seen a big impact on their life in all areas, and lots of people reporting, I'm feeling hornier than ever in lockdown. But equally, lots of people are saying, I don't want sex at all. You know, I'm caring for parents. We're shielding. We have young children. We're homeschooling. And there seems to be this almost unwritten rule that, oh, if you're in lockdown and you're with partnered up, you should be, you know, at it like rabbits. And that puts a tremendous amount of pressure on couples to kind of keep up with the Joneses and then perform properly as a couple. My advice to those people would be to just do what feels natural to you. And as long as you're keeping an honest and open dialogue with your partner about that, so you're both on the same page, it's absolutely fine. And just have faith that eventually, once this is over, you know, sex life will return to normal.
With masks or without?
It depends.
When
was your test?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Joking apart, they did issue, didn't they, advice on how to have sex safely during a pandemic. And it was things like that, you know, wear a mask, don't kiss.
Different positions.
Facing away from each other positions. That's why sex toys were so kind of great in the pandemic for people who were continuing to have sex and trying to do it in the safest way possible, because you can still be sexual with a person, but you don't have to be that up close and personal. You know, if you're using toys with someone else, and you can even do it, like I said before, you can do it digitally online over Zoom.
Oh, can I tell you both about a delivery I had?
Oh, please do.
So I had a delivery and it wasn't a Love Honey one, and it wasn't a sex toy. And the postman, it was quite big, and he put it down the side and he said, it's not ticking, is it? And so I went, no, it's turkey. Right. You know, that old joke. And he didn't laugh.
Oh, dearie me. Egypt. There was a funny story as well, talking about Zoom and sex toys. Did you see the poor woman who was given an interview? I think it was on BBC News.
Yeah.
And she didn't realise that she had a dildo on the shelf behind her. And bless her. I think she tried to kind of get out of it by saying it was an ornament. But I think we all know. Oh, what it was. But again, you know, you've just got to be a little bit careful when doing things via Zoom, I would say.
Absolutely. Always check your background. And if in doubt, have one of those digital ones put on for you. Pretend you're in space or something.
Yeah,
Can I ask you something about the Zoom sex? You know, you were saying that you need to have a level of trust. Mm-hmm. But invariably this will be, I mean, so if it's someone you've just met, they can say what they want. You don't know they're going to stand
by.
They
could be screenshotting you, couldn't they, and all sorts.
Yeah, how can you?
They could. There is this level of, risk that is put upon a person whenever they do anything, which is putting their image in the digital sphere. I guess safeguarding yourself is by getting to know that person a little bit beforehand. It is very difficult and they're very choppy waters to navigate. And if you have any kind of red flags or any inkling that this might not be quite the best decision, just withdraw and see how they react. A good person will be understanding. A person who perhaps didn't have the most honest of intentions might then decide to put more pressure on you to kind of perform for them, so to speak. So it really is about using your initiative and trusting your judgment. And really having faith that you're doing the right thing for you.
Mm. Also, I mean, there could well be people who haven't had any sort of intimate relationships whatsoever for the past 12 months. How difficult is it going to be for them to kind of get back out there, as it were? I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm sort of worried just about kind of social situations. I'm out of practice. Do you know what I mean? I feel like I'm going to have some training before I find myself in a room with a vol-au-vent in one hand and a glass of bubbles in the other. Do you know what I mean? Never mind in the bedroom.
Well, I think the positive side of that is that everyone's in the same boat. No one has been practicing their social skills, particularly in the last 12 months. So let that be a little bit of reassurance if you are out there and you're worried that, you know, my social skills are pretty shocking right now. You might find that so are everyone else's. And the other thing is, while we haven't been social for the last 12 months, we are very social creatures, so slipping back into the kind of old way of things, it's going to be a little bit like riding a bike for most people.
I had a bike.
Yeah, don't wear those cycling shorts again, though. That was a bad idea. If people are in a relationship and they are worried that the spark has gone, what would be your advice there?
I have my absolute foolproof advice for getting the spark back in some way, shape or form is so basic. And lots of people roll their eyes and think it just won't work because it's so simple. But it is to write a list of 5 things that you would like to try, that you've done before that you'd like to revisit, or something you would like to do with your partner. And they don't actually have to be particularly sexual, but they do have to be something that is going to bring you closer together. You get your partner to do the same thing and then you compare lists. If there's absolute no-go things on your partner's list, you agree to veto them. And if not, then you take it in turns to try something from each other's lists. And that is just a brilliant way of expanding your sexual horizons, experimenting with your partner. And even if you do something that you're like, that was great, but we're never going to do it again, you've just added another string to your bow.
Amazing. I love the idea of that as well, because I know whenever Ali and I spoke to people, and it's like, communicate. That's so much easier to say than to do, isn't it, in some relationships? Mm. And I think a lot of the issues with this is because people have been together the whole time, any kind of weakness in their relationship, maybe it is communication, has been really kind of the spotlights on it. But this sounds like a really fun way to do it. So again, if it's something like, I don't know, make a pizza together. Well, do you know what I mean? Something like that, even if it's something fun, it's a non-threatening way of kind of getting it out there.
It's interesting you say that. Did you say only 5 things? Because I'm on 8 at the moment on my list. And
well, you can agree a number. It could be 100 if you like.
5 of them do involve food. So yeah, I'm going to go with 10. I'm going to put 10 things on my list and see how we get on.
Can I ask Annabelle about this? What about this, Ali? Because Annabelle, Ali and I haven't seen each other for ages. And we were just saying, I was going, I've put weight on. I've done that, the lockdown comfort. Most people have been exercising and mine's been button soup. We'll talk about that later. How would people, not just kind of, self-love and self-care and stuff, but how do you think people should approach their own, how they feel about their self-image? Because I think a lot of people will be feeling not that great about themselves.
Yeah, I mean, there is the kind of often talked about lockdown stone that quite a few of us have found. I think self-image and promoting a good self-image is something that is a lot easier said than done. And it's kind of one of those things where you have to almost make yourself do it. It's like fake it till you make it. So my advice would be, I do positive affirmations every morning where I list three things about myself that I think are positive. And I'll say that to myself a few times in the mirror, and I have to do it no matter how rubbish I feel, whether I feel sluggish or whether I feel hormonal or whether I feel out of shape or whatever. I have to list three things that I think are great and should be celebrated about me. And just by doing that, that releases a little chemical, a little hit of oxytocin, a little hit of serotonin, which are feel-good chemicals. And just by doing that first thing in the morning, you're kind of setting yourself up for a more positive path throughout the day. And if you can remember to bring it back and compliment yourself, then you're on the first steps to increasing your self-acceptance and self-celebration.
I love that. It's like, but isn't that how the Candyman started? You know, but it's, and even just doing that, Annabelle, releases serotonin.
Yeah, it does. As does smiling. If you smile at yourself in the mirror, yeah. I mean, I'm literally sounding like I'm just kind of reciting scenes from horror films now, but it's true.
I can see how that would work, though. It's like if you force yourself to laugh, then you actually do laugh. Do you know what I mean? Like, should we try it? Yeah. Go on, really, let's try. Yeah, we sound insane. The other thing we were talking about, obviously, you know, people finding themselves kind of stuck in a bit of a rut, because let's face it, you know, lockdown has gone on and on and on and on and on. There was an article in the Metro paper, actually, about how you can tell if you are in a sex rut. Would you like me to take you through the top 10, ladies?
Yes, please.
If you have sex always in bed, apparently that means you are in a rut. Do you agree with that, Annabelle?
I think it's always good to move things outside of the bedroom occasionally. I think if you are in a house share and it's difficult, then perhaps the bed is your only opportunity.
The airing cupboard.
I wouldn't beat yourself up about it if the bed is where you always have sex. And I do think, I do love lists like this. I think they're really good for helping people kind of look at their sex life through a different lens. But they can also add a bit of pressure to an already very tense time. So a pinch of salt, I think.
Yeah, not everyone wants to do it on the top of the washing machine. This next one makes me laugh. One of the most common signs, apparently, on a sex rut is if you have sex on exactly the same day every week. Do people do that? Do they have, like, sex day?
They do. It's actually, do you know what? It's something I do advocate for couples that are going through a dry spell, is to plan for sex. And it sounds really unromantic and really kind of rigid, but it actually really helps a lot of couples to have something to look forward to. It builds what's called positive anticipation. So just by having that in your diary and seeing that it's coming up, you get like a little buzz and you feel a lot closer to your partner.
I love the idea of someone writing that in their diary.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Dear diary.
What day would you go for? Which weekday do you think would make a good sex day? Monday, definitely not. I'm not feeling it.
A Wednesday.
Hump day. There you go.
Yeah. It's already taken.
At number three, you regularly reminisce about sexual encounters from the past, which are more exciting than your current sex life. Yeah, that's not the greatest of signs, is it, really? If you have sex always at the same time... like 10 past three. I can't do it any other time but 10 past three. If sex is never spontaneous, you could be in a rut. If you fantasize about cheating on your partner with someone more exciting, possibly a friend or a work colleague, that could also be a sign. You don't say. If sex always follows the same pattern of manual foreplay / intercourse with little variation or new pleasures such as oral sex, that could be an issue. Also, if you never try new positions, then maybe that's something you need to look at. Another sign is if sex lasts exactly the same time each time you make love.
A little leg timer on the corner, on the side table.
Who's timing it to the last second? Amazing. And if you have sex because you are expected to do so as a couple rather than because you really desire it. Do you think there's a bit of that at times, Annabelle?
I definitely do. I think for a lot of couples, because the idea of going through a dry spell or a rut is so feared by so many, they take action by having sex perhaps when they don't really want to. And for a lot of people, that doesn't really matter because once you get into it, it's great and you're really glad you did afterwards. But for some people, that doesn't happen. And then sex becomes a chore. And that's when you can find yourself having an aversion to all kinds of sexual activity, not just sex with your partner. So you might not want to masturbate, for example. If that is you, I would highly recommend kind of withdrawing from that behaviour, because it can be quite damaging to your kind of sexual, your personal and intimate sexual desires and wants and needs. And it can also have a knock-on effect with your partner. You'll start to kind of resent them for not understanding and not seeing that you're not having great sex and you're not really wanting it.
See, I know neither of you are going to professionally agree with me, because Ali, you're hosting a sex and relationship show, and Annabelle, you're Love Honey's sex and relationship expert. But I'm going to put it out there. Sex is ridiculous, isn't it?
In what way?
In every way. Look at the trouble it causes.
Yeah, there are certain upsides, though, to it, no?
Can't remember.
On that note, that's us out of time.
How's
that happened? But we're going to be back next week, and when we're going to be looking ahead to the new normal.
Yes.
Asking, you know, how will we readjust to that? If you are looking for love, we'll get some advice on how you can do that after June the 21st. But for now, good night.
Phoebe Lynch. BBC Radio Sussex.